Welcome to the Emotions and Money podcast, where we unpack the psychology behind our investment decisions and how our emotions could be sabotaging our financial outcomes. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and I'm joined by Paul Nixon, who is Head of Behavioral Finance at Momentum Investments. And we're going to explain why, when it comes to investing, understanding your money emotions is as important as understanding the investment itself. Paul, let's start off with that statement about emotions. Why, when it comes to money, like money is this thing, right? Why do our emotions matter?
It's a big question, a good one to start with. If you think about emotion is an extremely powerful driver of behavior. So think about powerful things like love, for example, and fear. So love, wars have been fought over love, right? Think of the Trojan War. So, you know, think about sort of things that we might do which are out of character when we're fearful, for example. So emotions are very, very powerful drivers of behavior, and that's why we need to understand them and also what's causing them as well.
You know, I'm just thinking about greed. You know, right now, you know, we're in the middle of a war in the Ukraine, and how greed also plays a really important part. So if you think about, the global implications of our emotions, it's going to have a big impact on our finances as well. Now, what I wanted to talk about as well today is this concept of behavior tax. And in your 2022 Sci-Fi report, by the way, this is a report Momentum Investments brings out each year, you talk about the fact that South Africans paid 6.5% behavior tax in 2020, which was COVID year, and about 3.5% in 2021. And this relates to the loss on their investments because of their behavior. So can you just unpack behavior tax for us?
Yeah, so behavior tax is, if we think about it in very simple terms, if you have a 6.5% behavior tax, for every 10 Rand you invest, it means that when you make a decision, you've only got 3.5 Rand left, basically. So it's actually tangible money value that's destroyed when you make a decision around your portfolio. So it kind of turns a paper loss into a real one. And that really, obviously, COVID was such a big amplifier of people's emotions. You know, we think about lockdown and think about, people, losing touch with their friends and family, people fearing infecting other people as well. It really turned up the dial on people's emotions, and their investments were no different. So we saw a much bigger behavior tax during COVID, for example, than even the global financial crisis. And it's because COVID affected all of us. You know, the global financial crisis didn't. You know, it's something that many of us read about. So behavior tax is that tangible value that you destroy in your portfolio through making decisions.
So let's just unpack that a little bit. So I may be invested. I think in terms of long-term impact, so I have an investment, and what you're analyzing is, had I have left that investment and done nothing, made no change, my return would have been X. Because I made a decision, my return is now Y. And my return is now lower because of the decision I made. And you saw that amplified, obviously, in COVID. 2021, 3.5%. So you're saying that the average person invested in a portfolio would have had 3.5% more had they have just left the money there.
Exactly.
So how did you do that analysis?
So yeah, it's a simple calculation of... maybe the calculation is simple, but to start off these things, you have to build what we call a behavioral engine. So you need to, every time someone makes a switch decision, so they change from fund A to fund B, for example, we need to first figure out if it's a behavioral switch, right? Because it might just be part of your investment goals. Not all switch decisions are bad.
Yeah, right? I had to cash out, by the way, for my son's university, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a decision. I mean, we saved the money. It was a goal. And I did inform because of course everyone watches when I take money out. I had to say to the asset manager, I said, I'm not taking it out because I don't like your performance. I'm taking it out because this was the goal. Mm. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. So what we do is we look at the fund that you switched from, if it was a behavioral switch, and the fund that you switched to. And obviously if the fund that you switched to performs worse, then you incur a behavior tax. So during the COVID period, I mean, we saw in March 2020, I think it was, the All Share Index dropped from around 57,000 points to about 35,000 points. And I think what caught So people move towards the cash side of the risk spectrum because they're scared. The problem, though, is that it only took markets 3 months to fully recover. And since then, of course, we've been breaking records. So what happens is it really sets up this perfect storm of behavior attacks, because you're leaving when the market is 37,000 points, then you're buying back in when the market has recovered. And in fact, it's gone further than when it actually dropped in the first place.
It's that the fear and greed, right? Yes. We always say buy at the lows and sell at the highs, but our emotions make us buy at the highs and sell at the lows.
Exactly.
Now, we obviously be speaking about COVID, and everyone will say, well, that was a one-off thing. Mm. But it's not. It's repeated every single year. Mm. People make decisions based on whichever direction the stock market's going on the wrong way. Do you have a sense of the longer term impact of that on longer term returns?
Yeah, so COVID obviously, as I said, turned up that dial. The global financial crisis, the behavior tax was around about 4%. On average, over a very long period, it's around about 1%, which is kind of in line with what we would see globally. It depends on which study. And of course, when you conduct these studies, it depends on how you slice the data. But you can think of the long-term effect of this at about 1%.
So if you're saying 1%, then that means that if I'm invested for 20 years, I am getting 1% less every year return because of my behavior. And we worry about costs, and I do. I always talk about costs, right? But our behavior is a cost, and exactly. I don't think we process that sufficiently.
No, precise, spot on. No. So if you think about the compound effect as well of paying that 1% extra over a period of time like 20 years, it's significant.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go back a little bit to the fear and greed. I'm just having a look here at the graph that you have in the sci-fi report. And that was very interesting as well, because, and I think we know this, I mean, it's obvious, but the fear and greed is driven by market returns. So you sort of said, you looked at the all share index, and you found that when markets were rising, people would then take on more risk. When people, and by taking on more risk, they would move more into equity-based funds. And when the markets were falling, they would move into lower risk funds, which tended to be more cash-like.
Exactly. So what happens is, you can think of the story being, so the title of the headline is investors are a little late to the party always. And that's the big problem, because in retrospect, the market's now fallen, you now move to cash, so you miss the recovery, which means that, again, you're late to the party. So we can see a very clear, and that's why we know as well. So investors' goals can't be changing in as close or as highly correlated as we see market performance and market volatility. So it almost seems that investors are moving or behaving like day traders. So when you look at all share index trading volumes and you look at switch volumes, they're actually relatively similar, which means, again, that investors who have long-term investment goals are now behaving like day traders who sometimes have a time horizon of days. And that's really the big problem. And that is such a big cause of this behavior tax.
I know over the course of these podcasts, we're going to unpack a lot of our behavior, our sort of the psychology behind all of this. But overconfidence in our own abilities has to be part of this, because I just was thinking about the self-driving cars. We all think they're not safe because we think we're better drivers, but actually we're really not very good drivers. I mean, I always say, if you ask a room full of people to put their hands up, how many of you think you're better than an average driver? Everyone puts their hand up, right? And I think that's, and by the way, I was telling you earlier, I actually used to work for a stockbroking firm, and people really believe that their stock picking skills are above average, and that they are going to choose the share. And this, of course, then feeds into the unit trust or any collective investments. There is the sense that I've been reading the news and I know what's going on. So there's the fear, I'm just scared, I'm putting my money into cash. Or there's, I think, in exuberant markets, there's this idea that I can outperform because I'm so smart.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the funniest things, exactly your example there. So if you ask people in a conference, sort of put up your hands if you think you're an above average driver, you'll see that most people will put up their hands. But then ask them to put their hands down again and reconsider, considering that mathematically that's not possible. And ask them to put their hands up again. Most people will put their hands up again because they think other people will put their hands down. Right? So, you've got this thing. It really is a deep-seated belief that you are better than the average person, right? And we all believe that because we have an ego. So that's there biologically to sort of defend our psychology, right? So yes, absolutely. I think Daniel Kahneman said, if he had a magic wand and could wipe magic away one bias, it would be overconfidence. I mean, if you think of Titanic, think many examples of overconfidence that has really, really caused human beings a lot of damage. And in investment portfolios, it's no different. It's one of the big ones to watch out for.
I'm having a little bit of a smile here, Paul, because not to be gender, to get into gender, but men suffer more from overconfidence than women, which is actually why statistically it shows that females are better fund managers over the long term because they suffer less from, of course, we all have overconfidence, but they have suffered from less than men. So that's just an interesting
that's a fact. Yeah.
That's a fact.
And by the way, women have lower behavior tax on average than men do as well. So, you know, that's what we find, which is interesting. Even on the disposition effect, which is more of a loss aversion kind of thing, again, on the securities platform, women tend to have a lower disposition effect as well. So again, it's those biases that are...
I did not see that in your information, in your report. That is very interesting. That is interesting, just to look at that gender bias, that women, and because we do know that. We know that from female fund managers switch less, and that's actually where the benefit comes over time. But I wanted to, so we understand we have these problems with our thought processes for various reasons, fear, overconfidence, all of those things. But it's the way our brains are wired. But if we understand it and we perhaps can overlay some sort of sense of, okay, I'm behaving like this because of that, let me counter myself, which are the biases that we have that you think affect our money the most, and how do we kind of solve for those?
So, I mean, look, we've chatted about it briefly. So, you know, sort of, it's fear and greed. Those are the two biggest ones. So fear is obviously related to loss aversion. So that's, you know, obviously if you ask people, I think there was a survey done by the CFA Institute, Research Institute, a couple of years ago, and they said, what is the number one thing you want from your investments? And people said financial security. So it should be no surprise that when that's threatened, in other words, when a market goes through a dip, that people will try and move money around, because that is obviously their biggest fear, is losing money. And what they don't realize, obviously, is that behavior, self-fulfilling prophecy, is actually that you lose money because of that that behavior. So I think, look, from an investment bias perspective, I think overconfidence and loss aversion would be the two biggest ones. The root causes of these things, so the OECD in Europe did a study recently that they sort of clumped, you know, if you go to Wikipedia, you'll see about 200 listed biases, right? And there's a lot of clutter that behavioral sciences has generated because of the interest. But we can actually sort of distill these into four main biases, or four main decision-making problems. And the first one, I think it should be, you know, we're in the attention economy, right? So everyone is competing for our attention. So your brain is, we think our brains are supercomputers. They are in certain dimensions, but they're not in others. You know, so if you think about the amount of stimuli that we're exposed to every single second of every day, we're only capable of processing a fraction of that. So our brain is constantly trying to filter stuff out and doesn't know what to pay attention to. And that's why we're often drawn. So attention being the one, we're often drawn into, you know, past performance, Bitcoin prices, you know, these things that are sort of thrown at us all the time.
Because that's easy information, right? I can see Bitcoin's this, past performance. I now need to analyze a company or a market, or I have to do deep analysis. I think isn't that a fast and slow brain thinking as well, that Cardamon spoke about. But the idea that I must now go and do some research and homework and actually make deep decisions, maybe I should just...
Don't want to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's even voting. I mean, one of the most important decisions that you would make as a voter, same thing, right? We pick people that, you know, we vote for based on what they look like, whether we think they're trustworthy. So here's a fascinating experiment as well. So I've done this before. You put a statement, any statement you like. So let's say Western countries, for example, pursue an unstable economic policy. So make it a complex statement, right? So something that sounds daunting. Then sort of put Donald Trump's picture under that statement, and then ask people if they agree or disagree. Then put Barack Obama's picture under that statement, right? And you will see that overwhelmingly, people will prefer, they will agree with the statement if Barack Obama's picture is under that statement. Now, of course, if you go to some deep South states in the United States, it might reverse. But the point is, it's much easier to evaluate the person saying the statement than it is to evaluate the statement itself. So we're constantly, our brains are trying to conserve very valuable energy.
We're trying to shortcut everything. So how do we overcome this in a decision? So take the specific one. Is it just... do a little bit more work, I don't know, or go speak to someone who's done the work.
get an advisor who's good at that stuff. So I think that's one of the things that you should be paying your advisor for. You know, your advisor shouldn't be trying to pick the next best fund manager, because that's impossible. So, you know, what your advisor should be focusing rather on is keeping you, instead of, you know, we have this bias to be very present orientated, your advisor should be keeping you focused rather on your long-term goals.
Long-term goals. I was at the Volvo yacht race on Sunday. I was very lucky to get an invite, and they had the new Volvo, electric Volvo there. The price tag is astronomical. And I have lots of goals that I want to achieve, you know, my bond paid off, my retirement, I want to have a few more overseas holidays and all that. But it's amazing how you look at that car and a lot of that just goes, oh, wow, maybe, what if, because it's so beautiful.
So, that's dopamine, Maya.
That's dopamine. And that's what you need someone to stop you. Fortunately, I think I'm sensible enough not to do it. And I think the pricing is just too big, but it is that dopamine. And it is, and it's so interesting you talk about the role of the financial planner or advisor, because that's also part of it. It's like, okay, you like that car. How does it fit into your goals? And what would the impact be on all of those goals that you did in your cold state? I think Dan Arley who came up with the hot and cold state as well, where when you're in a hot state, do not make decisions. When you're like pumped up and the dopamine's going, you've got to go back into your cold state, your thinking state, which is sleep on it. Mm. And then, and any other, other biases, belief formation problems, I think you highlighted.
Yeah, so if we quickly run through them, I mean, we spoke about A, B, C, D. So we spoke about attention problems. That's everything is competing for our attention. The problem is our brain is trying to filter out or figure out what's important, and that's how we form a belief, right? So think about how people form beliefs about COVID vaccines, for example, right? That depends very largely on what WhatsApp groups, what Facebook you're looking at, those kind of things. So people think, if we think about a nice simple example as well, people think that adding a salad to a burger makes it healthier. But of course the...
What is healthier than chips?
Well, it's not, because the sugar content in the dressings actually...
Yeah, but without salad dressing.
In the salad dressing.
Do
salad
not
dressing.
Argue with me on this one. Yeah.
Exactly.
If I put a salad, no, but you're right. I mean, a salad, understand what else is on the salad. Yeah. So that's a little bit more deep thinking.
It's a little bit more deep thinking, yeah. So it's how you formulate beliefs about the way the world works, for example. Then it goes to the C's, which is choices. And we know about choice overload. So the more, I mean, how many 1,500 unit trusts out there? I mean, how is an investor supposed to, you know, be able to cut through active, passive, growth, value, you know, all this kind of stuff? It's impossible to do, right?
I mean, Paul, I've got a big issue with the industry about this because the choice is creating paralysis. It really is. People, and it's FOMO, right? If I choose this fund manager over that one, I'll outperform. They may outperform. And then we'll get, I think we're definitely going to be spending a lot of time on the rear view mirror stuff, you know, switching on past performance. But, you know, it is difficult because there's so much out there and there's too much out there. And people think that if they just got the right investment instead of just starting. And I do blame choice for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, I mean, Paul Glimcher, who's a neuroeconomist in NYU, I mean, he did a fascinating experiment with chocolate bars. So, I mean, the long and the short of it is people couldn't pick their favorite chocolate bar out of a lineup of 30 chocolate bars, basically. So the point is, with a decision as simple as that. Well, so in this case, it was Snickers, and people couldn't pick a lineup, but Snickers from a lineup of 30. And some of them actually said afterwards, they asked, well, why didn't you pick it? And they, well, I didn't even see it. So your brain is trying to filter stuff out again. So sometimes you don't even see it.
So pure quantity made people not actually see it.
You don't even see it, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So again, that goes back to the attention thing as well. And then the final one, which is the biggest problem in investments, is the D, which is determination. So we have we just spoke about dopamine as well. So, you know, dopamine is all about the anticipation of reward. So it's not actually about the reward, it's about the anticipation. So that biologically, you know, it drives us to go out and look for food, right? So it's the anticipation of reward. And that makes us very present orientated, and we struggle. You know, we've all got an ab blast of 5,000 probably collecting dust in the garage for the same reason. Right? Mm. We struggle to actually, we don't have willpower. And I think one of the last thing to mention on that, which is very interesting, is that you can think of willpower as almost emotional capital. It's like an asset. And the more you have to make a decision, so, you know, if you're on a diet and you open the cupboard and you've got chocolate at eye level and you're making that decision again and again, eventually you will make the wrong one because, you know, you just run out of capital. Mm. You run out of strength, basically, or determination, basically, which is the D. So, that kind of wraps it up into, you know, and the four sort of groups of biases that we have problems with.
And it's quite interesting. I was the new money story. I can't remember his first name, Kruger, wrote it. He's a money, well, he's a money psychologist. He is a psychologist who writes about money. Mm-hmm. And he spoke about, he said, you never know, you know, it's all about making, it's small steps. It's all about making the next best decision. And he said, you may not know what the next best decision is, but you certainly know what the wrong one is. Mm-hmm. And I think that was so insightful as well, because exactly that, you know, the chocolate sitting there, You know that if you're trying to lose weight, of course, some chocolate is not a bad thing. Yep. But if you are on a calorie restricted diet, then you see the chocolate and you know that's the wrong thing. You may not quite know whether to put salad dressing on your salad or not, but you definitely know that that chocolate is. But how do we, before we sum up, it's easy to say these are our problems, but how do we overcome, how when it comes to investing, things like determination and choice problems? What are some of the things that we can do to help navigate that?
So if you look at a really good, so if you're looking for a really good behavioral science author, practical one, Katie Milkman does these, How to Change. She has a lot of podcasts, a lot of books, and she's a really, really great author. But I mean, sometimes it's actually just about very simple things. So it's about, for example, taking choice away from yourself. So same thing. So if you're on a diet, don't put chocolate in your cupboard, because know that every time you open the cupboard, you've got less and less emotional capital afterwards. From an investment perspective, think about locking yourself up in products. Now, I mean, I know there are very, very big fee discussions to be had between some lock-in products and some without, and those, you know, those that's obviously a big cost. But try and set yourself up for a situation where you perhaps don't have access to those funds if you've got an emergency fund in place already. So sometimes it's about very, very simple things that you know don't try and be the better person, because that's very hard. So just don't try and actually rely on yourself to make that decision. Rather take the problem out of the way so that you're not confronted with that problem continuously.
The best example of that is I'll save what's left at the end of the month. There's going to be nothing left at the end of the month. It's the debit order. And I always say, and you know, the inertia is can really work for us, because it's harder to cancel a debit order. Exactly. So set up the debit order. One of the things, Thaler in Nudge, the book Nudge, which is also all about the little behavioral changes that we can make. Go to HR and say, next year when I get my salary increase, just increase my contribution to my retirement fund by 1% more. Just, you know, commit or put a 10% escalation on your investment. So these things happen automatically and you don't have to make a conscious decision every time. So those are, and also, you know, don't stress about returns. Just make, and we're going to talk a little bit about this over the next few podcasts, but just make sure that you're in the right investment for your needs, your risk profile, your goals, and just leave it there. Believe you me, I've been in the industry for, I think, nearly 30 years. And over no long period of time is there one thing that has outperformed another. I mean, obviously, if they're all equities, you know, you can have different. But really, at the end of the day, as long as you're in the right asset class, developing the right, getting the right sort of return for your needs, just leave it. And actually, it's so simple. That's the thing. But maybe we like to make everything complicated. Paul, this has been absolutely fascinating. I'm really excited that we've got a whole lot of other podcasts ahead of us to unpack this further. And to our listeners, please make sure you join us for our next podcast, where we are going to unpack how our personality affects the way we invest. And maybe you'll even find out what personality type you are. I've been reading about it, Paul, and I've got some ideas about myself. I must still do the test.